Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. During your Sunday discussion, lecture and discussion, I understand you've been sequentially covering verses in Bhagavad Gita. And so today is Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, text 67. And not only that, it's on the board. Look at that. Boy, we're really moving. So we'll chant the verse together, okay? Indriyanam hi charatam. Yanmano nu didyate. Tadasya harati pragyam. Vayurnavam ivam pasi. Translation: as a strong wind sweeps a boat away on the water, even one of the roaming senses on which the mind focuses can carry away a man's intelligence. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Unless all of the senses are engaged in the service of the Lord, even one of them engaged in sense gratification can deviate the devotee from the path of transcendental advancement, as mentioned in the life of Maharaj Ambarish. All of the senses must be engaged in Krishna consciousness, for that is the correct technique for controlling the mind. So they're translating this one. This chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita has two parts. The first part is Sankhya Yoga. The second part is Buddhi Yoga. In Sankhya Yoga, Sankhya means to count. So over on this side are, so it's distinguishing matter from spirit. On the matter side, there are 24 elements. And over on this side, there's one, spirit. So distinguishing matter from spirit and understanding the categories of matter. You cannot, I'll say it twice, you cannot create matter by combinations of spirit. I'll say it again. You cannot create matter by a spirit by combinations of matter. There's another section in Bhagavad Gita where Sankhya Yoga is further expanded, and that's chapter 13, Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is describing kshetra, the field of activities. And then there's kshetra-gya, the knower of the field of activities. And the field of activities includes the 24 elements and then the interactions of those 24 elements. When those 24 elements interact, then one gets all kinds of things, like happiness and distress, or feelings, attraction and repulsion, like and dislike, friend and enemy, feeling happy, feeling sad. States of mind are but combinations and interactions and transformations of states of matter. And over on this side is the soul, distinct from forms of matter and interactions of states of matter. And the soul is distinct. The important part in Sankhya, the soul is distinct. The purpose of this knowledge of the soul distinct from matter is so that we can go forward detached. We've been using this phrase, letting go of states of matter, the happiness and distress, the features of duality. Let it go and place your attention, place your consciousness over here within the realm of spirit. After giving Sankhya Yoga up to text 38 of chapter 2, starting with text 39 of chapter 2, Krishna then says that he's going to explain Buddhi Yoga. Buddhi Yoga, where the intelligence, not material intelligence, but spiritual intelligence. Is there a difference between material intelligence and spiritual intelligence? Yes. The function of material intelligence is taking the dictation from the mind. The mind is taking dictation from the senses. The senses are interacting with matter, and the senses say, I want to enjoy. And that signal goes to the mind. I want to enjoy, I want to enjoy. Dear intelligence, please come here at once. Yes, sir. Reporting for duty. What service do you have for me? I want to enjoy that object over there. Can you figure out how I can enjoy that object over there? Oh, yes, I can do that. I may have to go to school for many years. I'll learn how to get that enjoyment for you. I promise, if you give me a nice job, I'll wag my tail and bark. Woof, woof. You can throw me a bone and I'll go get that material enjoyment for you. Very good, very good. The intelligence then becomes, material intelligence is how to manipulate the features of matter in order to bring what the mind thinks is happiness. And the mind thinks what's happiness based upon what the senses say. But of course there's different modes of nature and different life forms. So one man's happiness is another man's distress. Or one man's food is another man's poison. So there are different types of material intelligence, how to enjoy. But we need material intelligence in order to enjoy. Let me take this one step further. How the Srimad Bhagavatam explains what I just presented to you is by Narada Muni. Narada Muni met one king, King Prachinibhadi. He didn't just meet him. Narada Muni went out of his way to find him, because all of the kings in the line of Swayambhuva Manu, Narada Muni was their spiritual master. Generation after generation after generation after generation after generation. And here was this descendant of King Uttanapada, or Swayambhuva Manu, in the line of Swayambhuva Manu, who missed out on Narada's mercy. He was attached. He was pious, But he was attached to fruitive activities according to the codes of the Vedas. That's putting it nicely. Putting it bluntly, he was a sense gratifier. He wanted to enjoy. So Narada went to the palace of this nice king, King Prachinibhari. And because he was pious, he received Narada very, very nicely. The king, Kshatriya, is receiving the exalted Brahmana coming to the palace. Narada was very pleased by his nice reception. And so he said, I want to speak something of transcendental knowledge to you. So King Prachinibhari was very eager to hear transcendental knowledge. But Narada, being very expert, he can understand this king is very attached. So I can't speak up here. I have to speak here. So he told them a story. Once upon a time, there was a king. And there was a king, the king's name was King Puranjana. It's an allegory about King Prachinibhari. He just gave him a different name. King Puranjana. And King Puranjana was very pious. And everything was flourishing in his kingdom. He had great wealth, big treasury, powerful army, many followers. Everything was very, very nice except for one thing. He didn't have a queen. What's a king without a queen? So he went searching for a queen. He went searching high. He went searching low. He went searching this way, searching that way. It's like, you know, a love song. Woo, woo, woo. And I could not find my girl until... You know how the Bollywood version goes. This is the American blues version. Whoa, 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 I can't find my girl. So, one day, he was walking by a beautiful garden, and there she was, a beautiful woman, scantily dressed, of course, and the wind was blowing, and as the wind was blowing, her garment was moving this way and that way, enchanting the mind of King Puranjan. And she was bouncing a ball, and as she was bouncing a ball, he was mesmerized by her movements, bouncing the ball. Narada tells the whole story. You know, they fell in love. They got married. They have little Puranjans. And there's a whole allegory. He had his palace with so many, 9 gates. So it's the body with 9 gates. And he had his, you know, the serpent that was protecting the main gate. That's the life air. And so on and so on and so on. The senses, 10 principal soldier generals, the 10 senses, knowledge acquiring and working senses all within the palace, and so on and so on. So guess who the queen was as far as Sankhya Yoga is concerned? Intelligent, material intelligence. Because the one who wants to enjoy needs material intelligence in order to enjoy the facilities of kshetra. Kshetra-gya, the knower of the field of activities, needs material intelligence. That's why there's so many universities all over the world. So people can go out and get that material intelligence so they can go and bring the senses to the sense objects so that they can enjoy And you can do it very nicely. You can make a whole living setting up people for sense gratification. Material intelligence is different than spiritual intelligence. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pratipurvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upiyantite. One of the essential verses of the whole Bhagavad Gita is that one, from the 10th chapter Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is again describing buddhi yoga. Tadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upiyantite. So Krishna is unto those who, you can't get spiritual intelligence by going to the university. You can't get spiritual intelligence by the products of those things that people with material intelligence have created. Things like, you know, at the supermarket or at Walmart or shopping online, internet shopping. You can't get buddhi or spiritual intelligence from material intelligence or any combination of matter. But Krishna can give it. Krishna does give it. Dadami buddhi yogam tam. Who does he give it to? Tesham satati yuktanam vajatam priti purvakam. Krishna gives that spiritual intelligence to those who are constantly engaged in service on him. And what is that spiritual intelligence? It's how to get to Krishna. How to use this human form of life, which means these senses, same senses, this mind, same mind, and intelligence, material intelligence. You put material intelligence to work in Krishna's service. You put the mind to work in Krishna's service. You put the senses to work in Krishna's service. Even if they say, no, I don't want to do Krishna's service. Like our class this morning. The soul says yes, and the body, the senses say, no, I want to enjoy. So there's, in the yoga system, what's being described here is material intelligence and spiritual intelligence. Stitta pragya is the term that's being used here. And stitta pragya is possible where one has spiritual shelter. For those that don't have, just say it the opposite, those that don't have spiritual shelter cannot have stitta pragya. In this verse and the next verse, Krishna is speaking about the mind controlling the senses. That's when you have spiritual intelligence. So, you know the chapter in Bhagavad Gita where it speaks of the upside down tree, banyan tree with the roots growing up and the branches growing down. No such tree, except in a reflection where the roots are growing up and the branches are growing down. That's this material world where everything is upside down. Everything is upside down. That means roots grow up and branches go down. A little anecdotal piece of information for you. I have a video clip that was prepared by the BBC. You know what BBC is, right? British Broadcasting Company. So they did a study once. What happens when people become disoriented? They created a set of lenses that inverted the world. And so, you know, light could not come in except through the lens, and the lens made it such that the impression on the retina was upside down. so that when the person was, they took video or films of the person walking. So normally we walk like this. But because they were seeing upside down, they would walk like this. Couldn't even walk. Or the image shows the person was holding out a cup to receive nice British tea. And a person started to pour the tea, and they turned the cup upside down. Because they were seeing everything upside down. But you know what happened? After 2 weeks, the mind completely adjusted, and they started seeing everything right side up. Because we very much want to enjoy. And the machine is built in such a way, upside down looks right side up. Right side up looks upside down. You know, the body is such a machine. And after, then they showed, you know, after a couple of weeks, here comes the guy riding a bicycle. Zoom, zoom, zoom. Everything's fine. Weaving through pedestrians and up on a sidewalk and haribo. Everything's fine. We become conditioned to a world that's upside down, thinking it's right side up. And then comes along Bhagavad Gita that says, no, it's upside down. Here's right side up. And it's hard to make that adjustment. It's possible to make that adjustment when Krishna gives the intelligence. Then one can see right side up is right side up. So the path of yoga is for that purpose. I'll say it one more time. If one does not have shelter in Krishna, then it will not be possible to control the mind with intelligence. One will not even receive that kind of intelligence. But so the right way up is the intelligence is giving direction to the mind. Like, my dear mind, it's time for the holy name to be chanted. Please be attentive. And then the mind gives direction to the senses. My dear Mr. Ear, please pay attention to this sound vibration. And then the senses give direction to matter. And what's giving, where's the intelligence coming from? It's coming from the soul. And ultimately it's coming from super soul. That's where things are in proper alignment. That's Buddha Yoga, second chapter, Bhagavad Gita. After understanding what's the difference between matter and spirit, we have to get things in proper alignment. So Krishna's here in this verse describing the mind should not be contemplating, enjoying even one sense. One of the working or knowledge acquiring senses, when contemplating an object of the sense, even one of the senses, the example is given, vayor navam ivambasi. It's like strong wind going into the sail of a boat and it gets carried away. Somebody could say, what can I do? It's the senses and the sense objects, fire and butter. What can I do? Here's what one can do, withdraw the senses. But just by discipline alone, the tendency is what is upside down looks right. Because we've been for so long conditioned to happiness comes from sense gratification. Yehi samsparsha jab bhoga. That's the material circumstance. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti jan gunan karanam gunasangosya sad asad yoni janmasu. The spirit of the living entity that comes to this material world is a spirit of wanting to enjoy independently of Krishna. Enjoyment is just fine in relation to Krishna. The enjoyment in relation to Krishna is Krishna's enjoyment. Just like the question this morning about a woman being faithful to her husband, at the same time her only place of shelter is Krishna. And they're not contradictory, because in service to Krishna, I am faithful to my husband. In service to Krishna, I am taking care of my family. In service to Krishna, I'm doing whatever I'm doing. In service to Krishna, I'm a sannyasi. In service to Krishna, I'm a pujari. In service to Krishna, I'm studying whatever it is that we're doing. And not doing things that we're not to do because of shelter in Krishna. And there's protection. And there's spiritual strength. Protection from being carried away. Like a boat in a strong wind gets carried away. So instead of contemplating an object for enjoyment, even we're a devotee, it doesn't give us a license to contemplate objects for enjoyment. Even one of them. Rather, each object that we see should be, here is some opportunity or some facility for serving Krishna. Here's a little example. When Srila Prabhupada would go for walks in New York City, I had this experience. Prabhupada would see a beautiful building. And immediately he thought, this would be a very nice temple for Krishna. We should have such a temple like this one. Very nice. He wasn't thinking, oh, I can enjoy. Once he was visiting our temple in Detroit, and the temple president had newly arranged, they were making many, many devotees. So they started with a little place, and then it was an in-between place, and then it was a big place, big place. And they invited Prabhupada to come. And Prabhupada was very pleased with how nicely they were doing, growing and growing. And so rather than put Prabhupada in that big house, they got a separate apartment for him for the days that he was going to stay in Detroit. So during one lecture, Prabhupada explained like this, how would you think if Swamiji is visiting Detroit for 3-4 days and his whole time he spent making arrangements to make a nice apartment? After 4 days, 3-4 days, he's gone. Would you think that would be very good for Swamiji to do? No. And same, he was saying, we're in this material world just temporary, flickering. Some flash of time and we're gone. And if our whole time is spent trying to make it a comfortable place, is that very good? No. Our attention should go to the eternal. Na sate vidyate bhavo na bhavo vidyate sataha. Ubhayor api drishton tas tvaniyos tattvadarshibhi. A tattvadarshi, a learned person, Krishna is giving this knowledge so we can also become fortified in knowledge, strengthened by knowledge, and understand the peril of contemplating sense objects in the mood of enjoyment. Even seemingly innocent. It's not innocent. The very nature of contemplation of material objects is you make a little compromise in your standards of devotion. The next thing you know, before you even blink your eye, this little becomes a big deviation. Has anybody ever noticed that? I see some persons raising their hand. They noticed it. It happens that way. So be very careful. That's the advice. So just two last things. The emphasis that Prabhupada is making in his purport is bhakti. It's not just control of the senses with the mind, because that's flickering. But something that's steady is where there's attachment and devotion. When one's devotion becomes mature, one practices bhakti, we're all in the sadhana bhakti stage, but when that sadhana becomes steady, nishtha, when our faith becomes firm and strong and steady, then there's no question, even if some distracting object or thought enters the purview of the senses or the mind, the mind doesn't go there because of being fixed with shelter in devotion. The message that Prabhupada is presenting in this purport is this same message that Krishna is presenting in the 10th chapter Bhagavad Gita. That is, steady intelligence is buddhi. And when there's steady intelligence or spiritual intelligence, it gives direction to the mind. The mind gives direction to the senses. The senses don't wander. The mind doesn't wander. By strong intelligence, by that direction that tells us, go to Krishna. It starts in the heart, where the soul is saying, I want to be with Krishna. So these practices of sadhana that I'm doing, therefore, that purpose. It means that the sadhana is nurturing that desire to attain Krishna's shelter. When Krishna sees that, Krishna helps us. The other processes don't have that same, you can say, Krishna factor. Not in the same manner. Not in the same manner. Trying to control the senses and mind otherwise, it's an endless task. The mind and the senses are very demanding. We've all experienced it. Like, you know, just sit down and grab your bead bag and start chanting. And the mind goes. One devotee told me once, Maharaj, when I set my bead bag down, I get a little relief. As soon as I pick up my bead bag, and even before I start to chant, my mind is gone. I set my bead bag down and I can be a little more peaceful. But if we, with faith, practice sadhana bhakti, that is to say, if we actually take shelter of Krishna, take shelter of Krishna, if we eagerly call for Krishna's shelter, I'm thinking to share with you some of the things that we've gone through during our japa retreats. I'll share one of them. This is from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur in one place gives three recommendations or tips for improving the quality of chanting. And one of them is to, when chanting, contemplate on the meaning. And what is the meaning? What did Prabhupada teach us? What is the meaning of chanting? We're calling the internal potency, O energy of Krishna. Hara in the vocative becomes Hare. O energy of Krishna, please engage me in the service of my eternal master, Krishna. It's an appeal for service. So contemplate the meaning. He distilled it down into a simple phrase. It's very powerful, but first we'll get you there. It's requesting to be engaged in Krishna's service. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, constitutionally, we're servants of Krishna, but we've abandoned Krishna. It's like, you know, we had a relationship with Krishna, a loving relationship with Krishna, and we walked away. Krishna didn't do it, we did it. Krishna didn't say, get out of here. We said, Krishna, get out of here. Or we're getting out of here. We want nothing to do with you anymore. I want to be independent. Independent enjoyment. See you later, Krishna. And at some point, we realize it's not a good program. I want to be with Krishna again. So now we're chanting Hare Krishna. Please engage me in your service. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur distilled it down to a very simple phrase. When chanting, chant with the mood, Krishna, please accept me. Try it. Tomorrow morning or sometime today. Tomorrow morning during japa, when it's you're fresh and peaceful. Krishna, please accept me. It's a whole package in a very compact form. We'll unpack the package and then put it back again. It's, my dear Lord Krishna, I've left you. I have abandoned my relationship with you, and I've been so long journeying in this material realm, suffering lifetime after lifetime, trying to find happiness and finding only misery. Now I've come to my senses. I want to again be engaged in your service, although that I have no qualification for you to accept me in your service once again. Kindly accept me. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Call like that from your heart while chanting. Let that phrase come into your mind, Krishna, please accept me. Let it go into your heart, Krishna, please accept me, while chanting the holy name. And watch what happens. Or not watch, experience what happens. It's very powerful. If you can capture that mood and enter into that mood, the mind becomes fixed. The senses become fixed. You feel reciprocation or kindness, mercy from Krishna coming as you're chanting the holy name. That's the recommendation that you find in Prabhupada's purports. I'd like to read the next verse in purport, and then we'll end. It's connected. Tasmat yasya mahabaho, therefore, O mighty armed one, one whose senses are restrained from their objects is certainly of steady intelligence. We've been using this phrase, sitta pragya. Here it's pratishta pragya, but it's the same meaning. Steady intelligence, buddhi yoga, sitta pragya. The phrases that are slightly different, but essentially mean the same thing. What is that steady intelligence? The steady intelligence is Krishna's given you that steady intelligence. Because tesham satata yuktanam. Satata yuktanam. Constantly engaged. Bhajatam priti purvakam. Dadami buddhiyogamtam. So the curbing of the senses with steady intelligence is Krishna consciousness, not just mechanical, struggling with the mind and senses. purport. One can curb the forces of sense gratification only by means of Krishna consciousness or engaging all the senses in transcendental loving service of the Lord. As enemies are curbed by superior force, the senses can similarly be curbed, not by any human endeavor, but only by keeping them engaged in the service of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. That our mantra, Krishna, please keep me engaged in your service. Or, and the mood is, Krishna, please accept me once again in your service. But keep it simple. Krishna, please accept me. A visual impression of that is like a child reaching for their mother or father. It's universal. Doesn't matter what culture you're in. The little child looks at their mother and father and goes like that. And what does it mean? They want to be picked up. They want to feel the shelter of their mother and father. Anywhere in the world you go, it's the same thing. And after being held in the arms of the mother, while in the arms of the mother, the child reaches to the father like this. He wants to be held by the father. And after being held by the father, he then wants to get down and run around again. And 3 minutes later, it's this. Please accept me. That's what it's. Please give me your shelter. Please show your affection and acceptance of me. And it, you know, it can go on hundreds and hundreds of times. So it, and loving parents are very consistent. They don't say, "Oh, stop doing that. We already picked you up already. How many times do you want to get picked up? Stop doing that." Validation of the small child is imperative. So they feel the affection of their mother and their father. And Krishna's, where does that capacity come from? From Krishna. And we're in that helpless position. In this ocean of sense gratification, I mentioned this yesterday morning, our austerity in Kali Yuga is living in a sea of abominable circumstances. People that are racing, competing to go into more and more hellish condition of life and calling it happiness and progress. It's terrible. And it's everywhere. Where can you go where you don't find it? Two times ago when I was visiting Tirupati, my memory of, I may have shared this with you, but I'll do it again. When I was, you know, like 12 years ago, I visited Tirupati. And I took the train from Chennai to go to Tirupati. And, you know, my impression is, you know, South India, at least, you know, going to the sacred place, here's a place of sanctity. That was my impression. And when I got to Chennai, I saw these huge billboards everywhere, advertising anything and everything right in your face. Street level. Like the whole side of a building. I thought, wow, what happened to Chennai? And then we got on the train going to Tirupati. You think, well, at least they're going to the sacred place. And it was one of those chair cars that was, you know, open, seating, everybody goes everywhere. And the young people that were on the train were partying like shamelessly, dressed shamelessly, speaking, drinking, eating anything. I wanted to like disappear or vanish or like, wake up, I'm having a bad dream here. Kali Yuga is advancing, and they're going to Tirupati to see Balaji, and, you know. In open, shamelessly, in open public, like, you know, nobody's around. They're just partying. Shocked. Where's their sanctity left? So our austerity is just living in Kali Yuga. Going on pilgrimage to Tirupati. The relief from that is the association of devotees and the chanting of the holy name and the hearing of the topics of Krishna together. That's our shelter. And by that shelter, it's so powerful, one's mind and senses can become freed from this attraction of sense gratification. As enemies are curbed by superior force, the senses can similarly be curbed not by any human endeavor, but only keeping them engaged in the service of the Lord. One who has understood this, that only by Krishna consciousness is one really established in intelligence, and that one should practice this art under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, is called a sadhaka, or a suitable candidate for liberation. End of purport. What we need to progress nicely on the spiritual path is given very nicely in Bhagavad Gita. And through Bhagavad Gita as it is, we get entrance into what that means of controlling the mind and senses and staying on the path, being protected by the instructions of Krishna under proper guidance of the spiritual master, the favorable breezes caught in the sails to carry us to the desired position instead of away from the path of spiritual life, as can easily happen just by contemplating sense objects, even as devotees. We should be very careful. Okay. Chapter 2, Bhagavad Gita. Any comments or questions?
Maharaj, this is related to the first teaching of today.
Related to which?
To the first teaching for today in the morning.
Okay, morning class.
Morning class, yes.
Okay.
The question is about marriage as an institution and families. Since most marriages, I mean, predominantly marriages and families are based on substantially materialistic notions, and Krishna consciousness says that this should not be what you should be after, what should be the basis, you know, what should be the objective of families or marriages at present? How
Fantastic
do we go about
question.
It?
Fantastic question. Jai, wonderful question. There's been a seminar here on this topic, right? Find one of the local devotees and they'll give you, it's a very important question. They'll give you the recordings of the classes that where this was topic was discussed. But the basis is service. Husband serves the wife serves the husband, and both together serving Krishna. In Krishna consciousness, the relationship of husband to wife, wife to husband, is together we serve Krishna. You have this role, I have that role, together we serve Krishna. And we do so under the guidance of spiritual master. So now there's different details of duties. But that's the starting point, the essence. Krishna has made some arrangement. In my life, I choose to enter into household ashram. Krishna has made an arrangement. This particular soul is a person for me to together serve Krishna. I have this role, she has that role. We together, we serve Krishna. Then Krishna sends some other soul to become a dependent, a child. But it's a relationship, a soul to another soul, to assist that soul to go to Krishna. And we have to be qualified as husband and wife, as mother and father, to deliver that soul to Krishna. So we have to get our act together. We have to become really qualified if we're going to deliver a soul to Krishna. And then for the family, and we need a place to live, and so I have to have some employment, so I'm doing this for Krishna. I'm making some earning, and I'm spending that which I've earned for Krishna. And it becomes that the context is service to Krishna. Although the initial principle may be male-female attraction. Let me elevate that and purify that to the platform of directed towards serving Krishna. And then all the dimensions of male-female interaction can become elevated to the platform of service to Krishna. The principles are presented in Bhagavad Gita. How to apply those principles requires training. So there are persons who can offer that training for one who wants that training. How the principles of Bhagavad Gita apply to Krishna conscious family life. Let's go back some distance and say to the Purusha Sukta prayers from Rig Veda. It's describing the process of creation by Lord Vishnu. And in the part of that process of creation, there's divisions of society. Varna and ashram is created by Krishna. He says in Bhagavad Gita, Chatur Varna Maya Shrishtam. So one of the ashrams is Grahastha ashram. Krishna created it. There's a, along with that which he's created, there's a means to use that which he's created to get to him. So although the attraction may be, just like the attraction may be material to do anything, but to speak of family life, to do anything, to get up and walk across the room and go and do something, some attraction to do something that's based upon something material. So we're not impersonalists and say, don't do anything. We're personalists and say, that something should be done for Krishna. Yad Kuroshi, Yad Asnasi, Yad Jahosi, Tadasi Yat. Whatever you do, austerity, charity, work, whatever you do, do that for a service unto Krishna. Tat Kuroshi Madarpanam. Make that a service unto him. And then the how-to is through proper training. Principles applied is what training is. The principle is service, common service that we share. Husband and wife share. Service unto Krishna. The wife assists the husband in his service to Krishna. The husband assists the wife in her service to Krishna. They assist one another in serving Krishna nicely. And when Krishna sees that, he smiles. He's pleased. You get that smile of Krishna, that's it. That's what one, that's the goal, pleasing Krishna. It can be done from any one of the four ashrams. Krishna created them all. And the purpose behind each of them is, according to one's nature or propensity, serve Krishna. Okay, someone else over here?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, to control anger, one should reduce expectations. And to
control anger, one should reduce
his own expectations.
Expectations.
And to reduce expectations, one should be selfless. So how to be selfless 24/7?
How to be selfless? What's the rest? All the time. Be Krishna-centered. All the time. Is that all right? Do you have a better means?
And be selfless for 1 hour or 1 or 2 hours, okay. But it's very difficult to be selfless all the day.
Keep practicing. And if you have the practice, if you try for selflessness minus Krishna, you won't get there. Even that 1 hour, 2 hours, it's illusion. It's not what real selflessness is. Real selflessness is Krishna. Why? Because we're actually part of Krishna. Like Prabhupada's example is the finger. The selfless service of the finger is, there's some food, you give the food to the stomach. You don't give the food to the finger. You give food to the stomach. But by giving food to the stomach, automatically nourishment goes to the finger and all the other parts of the body too. That's selfless service. The part needs to see his position in relation to the whole and serve. Krishna is the supreme whole. Serve Krishna. That's selflessness. That's our natural and constitutional position. Otherwise, there isn't selflessness. It's illusion. And you take that selflessness and make Krishna the object, because it's natural, in course of time, the healthy state of the soul is restored. It may take some practice, but it's natural. It's the healthy state. Prabhupada gives this very simple example. He gives it in Fahrenheit, I don't know what it is in Celsius, but the normal temperature of the body is 98.6. So supposing somebody has a temperature of 100, what should you do? Make the temperature zero? Not a good idea. Make the temperature 101? No. Make the temperature 98.6, yes. So what's our normal condition? Similarly, increasing sense gratification, that's not a solution to the fever of material existence. Making zero, that's not the natural condition either. 98.6 is there. So what is natural for the soul is to be in service to the Supreme Soul. Become situated like that, and the quality of selflessness is already accomplished. Because we're very much habituated to separating ourselves from Krishna, we have this 100-degree temperature, this fever of material existence. And understand that's, you know, selfishness. It's not good. So we want to give up selfishness, so we'd want to go to zero. That's not good either. It's not our natural position. The natural position is service to Krishna. And you cultivate that, and it will come naturally in the course of time. Okay. Any others that want to?
The present scenario of the whole world regarding food, it is the basic
the
of
presence,
this.
The present scenario of the whole world is what?
Regarding food, that is, food? In the angle of food, food, F-O-O-D.
Or food?
Yes.
Prasadam.
Of course, sir.
Food.
But the devotees going outside and doing jobs in various conditions, they are forced to take food in various restaurants like that. And
So we need more Govinda's restaurants. We're working on one right next door.
Yes. Yuktahara restaurants. Yes. That to, that should be supported by ISKCON, I request.
Okay. Sure. Fine with me. Everybody likes prasadam. But I think they also need Harinam. And they need Bhagavad Gita. And they need deity worship. And nice prasadam too. Okay?
Thank you for this.
Okay. Try this for now. Okay. In day-to-day life, there are so many dealings and interactions with different people. How can I be sure to act with spiritual intelligence? To be sure that you act with spiritual intelligence, you have to be 100% Krishna conscious. Like tuned into the Krishna channel. The Dhammi, Buddhi, Yoga. Krishna will tell you how to get to him. So, then you go back and Krishna says, well, I'll give Buddhi Yoga to those who are constantly engaged. So you perform your devotional practices, hearing and chanting very nicely. Read Bhagavad Gita carefully. Discuss Bhagavad Gita in the association of those who are very capable of directing how Bhagavad Gita can be applied. And you stay within that realm. You grow your Krishna consciousness in that realm. Prabhupada gave the example of a garden. Or sometimes in planting of trees, either. With a garden, you build a fence around the garden. Yes? Because animals will come and take everything that you're growing in your garden. Or some big animal will come and just trample over your garden, it's finished. You put a fence around your garden. Or a small tree, you plant a small tree, you put a fence around the small tree. After the small tree grows and grows and grows and becomes very big and strong, you don't need the fence anymore. But in the beginning, you need a fence to protect that small tree. So in the beginning, be very careful. Don't allow your mind and senses to go wandering here and there. Stay with fidelity or with, you know, being very chaste to those things that you know that devotee would do. Think, if Prabhupada was on this side of me and Radha, Madan Mohan were on this side of me, what would I do? That'll help. And Bhagavad Gita's in your hand. You know, when you're in challenging situations, you just call upon those who are shelters for you. And feeling their presence, you'll be protected. The risk, the devotee who wrote this, the risk is not when you're in those situations, it's when you're in those situations and you're not careful. When you're careful, taking shelter, you're protected. Even if some little deviation starts, very quickly you'll catch yourself or super soul will prompt you, no, don't go there. In the mood of trying to please those, to offer service unto those who are your well-wishers, that there's protection. I can offer some examples, but I'll refrain. I'll give one example. Something that helps a lot Let's say someone is in a situation where there's peer pressure to do things that devotees don't do. One teenager was sharing this with me, that, you know, in school, a bunch of friends, they were doing something, I won't even mention what they were doing. And because of peer pressure, they were thinking, well, I want to be accepted by my friends, although I know I shouldn't be doing that something. So they kind of just went along with what their friends were doing. And right up to the point of actually doing the, like, awful thing, they put on the brakes. They said, I can't think of, you know, letting those who have given so much care and love and affection in my Krishna conscious training, I can't do this thing. So they stopped. And then their friends were, you know, rejected them. You're not our friend anymore. But, you know, they weren't friends to begin with. They realized. They were, you know, not agents of Vishnu. They were agents of some other entity. Agents of Maya. And better to not have such agents of Maya as one's friends, because one will fall into Maya. But when one wants acceptance by others, you know, we do things that are foolish by bad association. So the protection is to stay where we're acting with spiritual intelligence. Ask yourself the question, those persons who are your spiritual shelter, would they approve this? Or in this circumstance, what would they do? The door for spiritual intelligence is open. Really? Do you believe in God's existence? And how did you believe in Krishna consciousness? And when did you know about Lord Krishna's powers? When did you realize that you have to believe in Lord Krishna? Oma jnana timarandasya gananjana salakaya chakshura miditam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Prabhupada described in one lecture in New York City about himself in that way. He said, I was loitering somewhere in the material world and my spiritual master found me. And somehow or another he made my life fortunate. Prabhupada looked around and he was very serious, in a very serious mood. And on his order, I have come to this country to do the same for you, to make all of you fortunate. Jai Prabhupada! And now I am asking you, you go forward and make others fortunate. Jai Prabhupada! So there's the answer. I was loitering in some dark place, thinking, you know, all kinds of foolish things in Maya, thinking I'm this and I'm that, but some inquisitiveness started up where I realized I don't even know who I am. I don't know what my convictions are. I don't know why I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm like, I bought into the program like anything, but I don't even know why. So there's details, but with that inquisitive spirit, Krishna sent all kinds of resources and people and situations, and Krishna was very, very kind. And I was recognizing Krishna as being very kind. I mean, I didn't know by the name Krishna, but he's making all kinds of arrangements to just this little inquisitiveness. And that's like I discussed this morning. With preliminary faith, you show to Krishna there's some faith in God. And he sends his devotees. That's how it works. And we can say yes or no. He doesn't force us to say yes. But if we say yes, then it takes us to the next stage of faith, where we're engaging in devotional practices. And we continue the devotional practices with faith. It takes us to the next stage where we realize, look at all these impure things inside my heart. I didn't even know were there. Woo, look at that. I'm not sure I want to look at them all. There's so many. But as we go on, we find there's lots of purification required. But we continue with that process and it comes to the stage of steadiness. So how it begins is a little sincerity, a little inquisitiveness, and Krishna sends the resources. He sends the devotees. He sends the transcendental knowledge. He sends that which we need to make the next step, and we just have to say yes. To say yes, you also have to let go of some unwanted things. That's how it happens. That's how it happened with me. I was just going along with life, thinking, you know, like everybody else is thinking. Material life. But somehow, you know, it's not right. Something's missing. Something fundamental is missing. What is that something fundamental that's missing? Krishna sent devotees, Bhagavad Gita, the holy name. And I said yes. I took the next step and the next step and just keep making steps back to Godhead. Something else? It's a different one. In morning class, I'll just end with this one, since we seem to be ready for prasadam. In morning class, you mentioned wife goes along with her husband. Suppose husband is not inclined to follow Krishna consciousness, but wife is practicing Krishna consciousness, then what? Does she have to go along with her husband? Wherever he goes after death. For the teaching is, the Vedic teaching works when there are qualified husbands. I mentioned that twice, so it's now a third time. And the qualified means followers of the Vedas. And a husband that's not a follower of the Vedas, if a woman is married to such a person who's not the follower of the Vedas, she needs to be a follower of the Vedas, or she needs to be a devotee of Krishna. Now, the difficulty is, the question specifically is, if the husband is not inclined to devotional practice, will the wife of necessity go to wherever the husband goes? No. If the wife becomes practiced in becoming attached to Krishna. Now then it's a different question. How does the wife who is practicing to become attached to Krishna handle a situation where the husband isn't? That's a different question. It's a difficult situation. By spiritual influence, all souls can become again attracted to Krishna. So There's no short, easy answer for, you know, that question. But the one that's being asked here, if the, according to Yam Yam Vapi Smaran Bhavam Chajat Ante Kalevaram, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, whatever the mind is attached to at the time of death, that state one will attain without fail. So, Archie, from the morning Bhagavatam class, the wife of Prithu Maharaj, she was attached to her husband, who was attached to Krishna, so the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He went to Vaikuntha, she went to Vaikuntha. So a wife or a husband or a child or an anyone should be attached to Krishna. Practice attachment to Krishna in whatever the circumstance of life that Krishna places you in. Cultivate becoming attached to Krishna and you'll go to Krishna. Or at least you'll make significant progress on that path to Krishna in this life. Okay. So it's time for prasadam, right? Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai. Jai.